For the past several years, we've had various forums here at Focal Point, but the ladies have never had their turn. And so I'm going to call this Preacher's Wives in the Hot Seat. And they're going to be talking all about the wonderful benefits and the beauty of being a preacher's wife, and they're going to be sharing some wisdom with us. But first, we're going to do a few introductions. Most of you have been here for the week, and so you've heard the bios for all of these ladies. Carla comes to us from up the road in Dripping Springs, about 40 minutes away. She has been a preacher's wife for 30 years. Her Starbucks beverage of choice is Java Chip Frappuccino Extra Ice No Whip. And her favorite shade of nail polish is pink, whichever one strikes her fancy on the wall at the nail salon. Next, we have Cherie Vestal. She has been a preacher's wife for 33 years, and she comes from Midland, Texas. And she has a cat named Pablo, and her favorite junk food is 90% dark chocolate. Next is Shana K. Jones. She comes to us from across the parking lot. She has been a preacher's wife for 20 years. Her favorite candle scent is Pineapple Paradise. And her favorite brand of flip-flops are Yellow Box. Last but not least is Kathy Jones. She has been a preacher's wife for 30 years. She comes from Houma, Louisiana. Her favorite meal at the Cracker Barrel are the kids' chicken tenders. And her favorite zoo animal is the giraffe. Kathy is unique from these other three ladies in that she did not marry a preacher. She married a milkman, and he became a preacher later in life. And so we're going to go through. I'm going to have a seat, and we're going to go through and ask some questions. And you guys are going to share some wisdom. Trent, let me know that there are tomatoes in the back if we needed to retrieve them for some tossing, but I think y'all will be okay. Our first question is, give one or two reasons, or three or four, that you love being married to a preacher.
Is this on? Okay. Well, since this was my topic that I just couldn't get everything together after everything that's happened this week, I guess I get to start off and say that my original topic was five reasons I love being a preacher's wife, and I can only think of two. I'm totally kidding. Just kidding. Promise I'm kidding, because I had a long list. That's a bad joke for being about why I love being a preacher's wife. No, I really do. Several things that really came to mind, but one maybe kind of silly one is that I'm crazy about my preacher. And so I enjoy hearing what he has to say, knowing that it comes from his heart, and just knowing that he is who he presents himself to be from the pulpit. And so I appreciate that about him, and that I'm able to reflect that about him. That's one of the blessings, I think, of being a preacher's wife. I think another favorite thing is that I have sisters all over the world, and some of them are sitting here that I'm very close to and thankful for, that we don't get to see each other very often, but as soon as I see them again, we pick right back up where we left off. And that not isn't necessarily just being a preacher's wife. I think any Christian woman can have that blessing and does have that blessing. I think that as a preacher's wife, you see more results or more fruits of your labor. You might see results of answered prayers more clearly than maybe just a woman in the church that maybe know things that are going on in the background. And so I love seeing answered prayers, not just in other people's lives, but in my own life. And again, that's something that's not just being a preacher's wife, but a Christian woman can see that as well. But I guess I just see it maybe a little bit more. I see how our family's priorities have always been automatic, and I don't guess that is necessarily true for every preacher's family, but it was for ours, that we knew what we would be doing on Sundays and Wednesdays, and when things came up, we knew what our priorities would be, and the boys didn't question what we would be doing. I didn't wonder what we'd be doing. I knew what we'd be doing. And so I'm thankful for those priorities. And then I guess the biggest thing to me is that the blessing of being a preacher's wife and a Christian woman is that when you ask God to give you a love for the members of your congregation, he answers that prayer. And that it's not always an easy love, like Eddie was saying something yesterday about sister social sandpaper or whatever it was. I thought, well, there's plenty of those. But sometimes I am sister social sandpaper and people are kind about me. But just like marriage, in marriage, love is a choice. And if you don't look at it that way, then you're in trouble. But love is a choice. You choose. Sometimes it, you know, oftentimes it's a feeling as well. But there are those days that it's a choice and you have to make up your mind that you're going to love your husband. And it's the same way, I think, with members of your congregation, that you make that choice to have that agape love for them, regardless of whatever mood you're in, whatever mood they're in, whatever kind of reaction you get from them, whatever feedback you get from them, negative, positive, you love them because you've made that choice to love them. And so that's something that I have seen God answer that prayer in my life to give me that love for them. And I think that every woman, every Christian can have that as well.
Reasons why I love being a preacher's wife. I did literally think of two. Only because I thought very short period of time on this one. The first one that strikes me is that, do you remember in the gospel accounts where there were some women who followed Jesus and ministered to him out of their means? That I know automatically what my talents, my number one use of my talents is, this is the way I feel about it anyway, is to minister to my husband out of what my means are. And that's a privilege that no one else in the congregation has. It humbles me, and I realize, you know, I'm pretty inadequate for that task, but it's very clear cut before me that no one else can minister to the minister like I can, and that's my privilege, and it's a blessing to have that and know that that is something that God expects me to do, and then I do. And then a second thing would be, and this is kind of a blessing in disguise, just because you're the preacher's wife, you're expected to do things and you have opportunities that are placed before you that you need to step up to. And that's hard for me because I think, well, I'm not a public speaker. I don't enjoy that or whatever it may be, whatever the opportunity may be. But because I'm associated with Mike, that opportunity is there for me. And that's actually a blessing in disguise. So
I thought about this for a while, and they've taken a lot of what I was going to say. So being the third one to speak on this, I wanted to add to, not only do you get to minister to your husband, but you get a privilege to minister in a special way to the members of the congregation. When they're hurting, when they're joyful, when they're sick, a lot of times they look to the preacher and his family for that, and that is a blessing. It's always a privilege to be able to pray with them and for them. And this isn't something, and a lot of these things aren't something that's unique just simply to the preacher's wife or the preacher's family. It is something that every Christian should be doing and can be doing. It is just unique to a preacher's family and, well, in a way that we are supported to do this full time, whereas many other people have secular jobs that distract them from that. This one, like Cherie said, I also think is a blessing in disguise. Though I don't like moving, and I am thankful that we've been at university for 9 years, and that's the longest we've ever been anywhere in our 20 years of preaching. Moving can be a blessing in that you realize that this world is not your home. And you realize what you're here for and that you're only here for a short time and you get an opportunity to minister to many people in many ways.
I really don't have to say anything after all this, but as Catherine said, I did not marry a preacher. But I am thankful now that I am a preacher's wife because he is such a wonderful person. And as my mother said, when God called him, he called a great man. Not that he called him in any kind of miracle way, but David is a better person, and I'm a better person for being a preacher's wife. I love what he does. I wish that people could see his heart and his humility like I can see it. He's a wonderful man. I never thought I would be married to a preacher, and I don't think he ever thought he would be a preacher. But it has brought us closer together. It's made us love the Lord so much more and what he really expects of us. He's also my pusher. And what I mean by that, when I say I can't do that, he says, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. So he's the pusher in the family, and he helps me so much, and I'm so proud to be married to David Jones. So proud.
All right. I'm going to go to Cherie on this one to start with. Describe one program at your home congregation that has helped to strengthen and encourage the members.
Well, we're currently doing a program that we call REACH, Realizing Every Active Christian Helps. And we do it on one Thursday night a month from 7 to 8:15. It's very limited in time, but it's very intense and power-packed in what we do in that time. And it's been a thing where, and it varies from month to month, we'll gather together as a group, whoever wants to come, from 93 to 3 months old is who we had last Thursday when we did our reach. And we gathered together in the auditorium for a brief period of what Mike calls phone visitation, wherein he gets out his cell phone or whatever other electronic devices are available and makes a call from the group to someone who's shut in or sad. We called Bob Sperlin's wife last time. And if you don't know Bob Sperlin, who's recently passed away, he was a great minister of the gospel who ministered from his bed for years. And he had passed away. And so we contacted her and did some phone ministry as a group. We sing to them. We pray with them. And it just uplifts. The children participate. And you can just see that it sparks everyone's heart for the Lord. And then we divide up. We do that for probably 15, 20 minutes maybe. And then we divide up. And there's a choice. You can choose to maybe go to this classroom and give it a makeover with these people who are going to, you know, paint and whatnot in this room. Or you can get into the church van and go on a smaller scale, maybe 10 people max, go visit, physically go together and visit somebody. And maybe you don't know that person, but the driver of the van does. And so you get introduced. And it's a great way for the members as a whole who may not feel comfortable going to a nursing home and making a visit to someone they don't have never met before. You can do this with the group and a small group. And so they love that part of that. Or maybe it'll be writing. We do some I always have to think three times before I say this. World Bible School work with maybe you're grading lessons together. And there's a group that goes into the room and they work on those lessons and addressing envelopes and doing something just physical office type stuff, you know, answering questions and putting stamps. And kids even will go in there. It's not limited by age. And this is the cool thing about it. And then we'll have cards for our missionaries set up on a table in the foyer so that when people come to REACH, they make a little personal note right then. And maybe, you know, this is something that's all on all of our intention list. I intend to write my missionaries more often. But if that card's out there, opened up with a pen on top of it, it helps make that opportunity possible. And so the missionaries, and they have loved it because they'll get cards from people with all these different little notes. We're praying for you today. And it's a win-win. It's just been super, super encouraging to our congregation, and each time we've had it, it's grown in attendance. So last time I think we had almost like 87 people showed up, which was just amazing. So we've really loved that program that we call REACH.
Well, we have this really big workshop every year where a lot of speakers come in and about 300 attendees, and it's called Focal Point. But in all seriousness, Focal Point has really helped university to blossom to work together as a family. But I think that anything that gets the majority of the congregation involved and working together will help that congregation to grow, whether it be VBS or a mission trip. We see our kids, our teenagers, take a mission trip to a children's home every year. And I enjoy going and being a part of that because just working together helps you grow together. We also did a flood relief effort last year. We had several floods in our area, and a lot of members stepped in and helped out with that. And all of these things that get you working together, help you to grow together.
Well, this is not really a program that I have to talk about right here. Is our Bible class, it's a Bible class program, but it's our material that we finally got the elders to decide to, they wanted us to look at some options. And Engraving Heavenly Truth is what we decided on because we had worked with it so much before. And our children have grown so much. We've started our second go-round. I think we're in the last quarter, next quarter, of our second time first year. And our teachers have learned so much from this program, and our children are loving it. At the end of the quarter, we have a Bible bowl among all the kids. And here lately, we've started letting the kids come up and compete with the adults. And they are really loving it. And the program that we've put into place has been great. Also, one thing that we've done that's helped the congregation there as for program is when they were having gospel meetings, the kind of preacher was kind of out on his own, or visiting preacher. And we've got them to start having fellowship meals at the building every night to get to know the people that are coming to help us out. Plus, they get to know one another better. Anytime you can have some type of fellowship that's a little bit different than what they're used to, it helps the congregation to grow. So it's an awesome place to come and work with and come and visit with. So y'all come on out there and do it.
We have something we call the Good Samaritans program twice a month. I think it's every first and third Thursday, or maybe it's second and fourth. I can't remember, but it's the anyone. It's open for anyone, but it's mainly what it is made up of is older, maybe retired people. I guess because it's on a Thursday morning, not everyone could make that there. But they do a lot of things together. They eat together, breakfast usually, and they'll go refill the cards at the back of the pews, or they'll put together the books that we hand out to our visitors. They'll all make cards and sign and send to people who are sick. They have all kinds of service projects that they do that I don't even know about because I don't get to go. But I think that has been something that has bonded those Christians together, because they're doing something that's good together, that's for someone else. So that's a good program that I think we have. We also have on Wednesday evenings, we call Friends in Faith. Started about 2 years ago. Dan Winkler had done a meeting at Dripping Springs, and he's talked to us about what their youth do. And they had a really successful program where they someone, a member of the congregation, fixes supper on Wednesday night, 5:45 or so, and the kids all come. Everyone, I think, sixth grade and up can come. But we a lot of times have younger kids, too, and have supper together. And then they'll have an activity, and they'll go around 7 and sing. And they'll sing until class starts at 7:30. And it's not anything that's real formal, but it gets them together, and they enjoy being together. And it's something that they are encouraged to bring all of their friends from school and in a kind of a more non-threatening, non-formal way. And we've enjoyed that. That's been a good thing. The only problem is finding people to make the meals, but we haven't had a real problem with it. But everyone is encouraged to do that, not just parents of teens that are in the group, but anyone that's a member is welcome to do that. And then we have Discipleship University. I'll give a plug for that. That's the first full weekend in August. And kids from all over, we say all over Texas, but some of them come from outside Texas. We have them come from from Midland area and down in South Texas. And it's basically a a lectureship, if you will, for teenagers. And the thing that is good about it for our congregation is that there's so many different people involved in preparing for it that may not ordinarily be involved in preparing for just the ordinary things that we normally have. And it just gets extra people involved. And any time that you can involve someone that may be on the fringe, it's a good thing. And we go to them and ask them. And oftentimes we sit back and wait for people to come volunteer. But we actually go and ask people, will you be in charge of this? Will you do that? So it's been something that benefits not just the teens that come, but our own people as well, because they're doing something for someone else.
Can you talk a little bit about Feeding the Firemen? I've seen some pictures on Facebook of what that program is and how you guys have accomplished that.
I can't remember what it's called. Is it called BASIC? Mom, can you remember? There's an acronym for it. There's an acronym for it that I can't remember, but we invite I forgot about that. Thank you, Catherine. Invite all of the ambulance personnel, the firemen, the EMS, the policemen, the sheriff's department, they're all invited to come have breakfast, and we start it pretty early, usually start around 6:30 and run it until about 9. And just to thank them, it's not any big deal for us, but we just thank them. We usually give them gloves that are stuffed with things like little notepads and pens and Kleenex and mints, and just so that they know that people are thankful for what they do and appreciate what they do. We do that once a year, I think in February. And I'll think of that acronym in a minute.
One of the things that's been such a unique thing for us living in Maud, a very small town and a very small school district, is the school will bus the seniors over, the graduating seniors, to have lunch at our church building, and Andy gets to give them a devotional. And at the beginning of the school year, every year, they bus the teachers over during in-service, and Andy gets to give a devotional for all of the teachers and feed them. So it's been a wonderful experience. I know that probably can't be duplicated many places, but I know that Dripping Springs has great relationship with the schools there as well. Okay, let's move on to our next question.
In fact, Discipleship University is going to be at the high school this year. We had to move to a larger facility.
All right. Shana Kay, I think you're up first on this one. What is one thing you wish you had known before your husband began preaching?
Well, I married a preacher, and that was my choice going into it. We got married very young. I was 18. He was 19 when he graduated from preaching school. And I was very naive, being barely 18 years old. And we did our first work. We worked with a small congregation that was about 35 or 40 members in Arkansas. And it was mostly older people. And I know we don't have any older people like that here, but sometimes older people can be very set in their ways and very stubborn and hard to convince of anything other than what they've always known. And I remember sitting in the living room one night, and we had probably been married yet less than a year, and Wayne and I did the bulletin every week, and it was 2 pages, and we had to staple them together, and the stapler wouldn't work, and he threw the stapler across the floor, and he said, "I give up. I can't do this. I'm not meant to be a preacher." And I said, "Yes, you are. I married a preacher." He said, "I'm going to go back and work with my grandpa on the milk route." I said, "I didn't marry a milkman. I married a preacher." And so the one thing is realizing how discouraged preachers can get from time to time and knowing how to handle that. Thankfully, I had some older, wiser women. I have a mother and a mother-in-law who are both preachers' wives and always have very wise counsel. But I know everyone can get discouraged from time to time, and preaching is not all discouragement. It's way more encouragement and way more of a blessing than that. But just simply knowing how to deal with that when that comes along, because though people in the world will treat you unkind, it hits a lot harder whenever it comes from your Christian brothers and sisters and elders. So that's the one thing I thought about.
I guess I had the same thing in mind, because when we were at school preaching, we had ladies' classes, and one of the classes were what the preacher's wife should expect. And they would say, you know, you're going to have people coming to your house and inspecting your house, and can't believe this and can't believe that. And actually, it was Dan's mom, Annette Cates, told us that you'll even have ladies coming over and looking in your oven and saying, oh, you don't ever clean your oven? And I thought, there is no way anybody, any Christian, would do that to another Christian. You know, I may be a preacher's wife, but I'm just a Christian. That's what I told people. I said, they asked me how I was even going to be a preacher's wife. I said, I'm going to be Kathy, and you have to accept me as Kathy, because that's all I know. And so I have had some ladies that have really come across exactly like they told us to, and I wouldn't believe it. So I guess I wished I really had believed what I had heard, but I guess I didn't want to believe it. But some people are really mad about criticizing a preacher's wife, and sometimes I feel like we live in a bubble. But you know what? My husband says, you can do it. You can do it. Like I said, he's my pusher, so.
I remembered what the acronym was. It's HANDS, H-A-N-D-S, and it stands for Honorable and Noble Devoted Servants. But what's funny about it is that Sam and Julie Dilbeck also do the same type of thing in Corsicana, but they also call it HANDS, but it stands for Helping Our Neighbors Do Stuff. Helping a neighbor do stuff. Yeah, so. The only thing I really could think about with regard to this was not knowing about how finances should be set up going into it, because preachers' finances and taxes are so different than everybody else's, it seems like. And so do your homework if it's not too late. You know, find out about Social Security, find out about how you can invest if you don't own your own home. You know, there's a lot of things. Just find a good person that knows preachers' taxes, that knows preacher finances, and get them to help you set it up properly where you won't be regretting something later, or having to pay too much in tax or not enough and then end up having to catch up later. So that's really the only thing that I could think of.
We were worried that we were going to all have the same answer, and I've been pleasantly surprised that we've all kind of taken them a little different direction, and this one too. Although I agree with everything you guys have said, the first thing that came to my mind was, and this is probably because I was young and selfish, I thought I was getting my own personal minister. You know, like my personal spiritual life was going to be great now because I'm married to this guy who's a preacher. How awesome is that going to be? Now, that wasn't the reason we got married. But I just assumed that that was part of the deal. And it took me a little while to realize that because my attitude was geared that way, that I was making myself a part of his ministry, which now I realize husband, wife, we minister to one another in those ways. But I now realize that, for me at least, and this may be different for you, it's not different because he's a preacher. I don't expect more of him than your husband, you know, who's a fireman, or your husband who's a dentist. We have the husband-wife in the Lord that we bond and strengthen each other. But I had unrealistic expectations of him because he was in the ministry, that was going to somehow make him this super husband that was just going to infuse me with all kinds of spiritual whatever. And I had to learn to stand on my own two feet spiritually. And I had to learn how to study my Bible for myself and how to strengthen my relationship with God. And I kind of just assumed that that was going to be part of the deal as a preacher's wife.
That's a good answer, Sheree. I think that's a temptation for all of us, is to coast along. All right. We've got two more questions. This is for you, Kathy, to start with. How has being a preacher's family impacted your children? How have you dealt with any bitterness or resentment in your children regarding ministry?
Well, as you know, Wayne's the preacher here, and how awesome he is. that may be my opinion, but and then I have a daughter that's a preacher's wife. But as they grew up, they saw some things that we would go through, and Wayne would say, "I am never going to be a preacher." And Shelley would say, "I'm never going to marry a preacher." And so you never say never, because they did exactly what they said they were not going to do. But I think going through the things, I didn't ever notice bitterness in them. I think it just made them much stronger, knowing the things that we had to go through. And they knew ahead of time that the things that we didn't know, maybe some of the things that they were going to have to go through, but they chose that life. And so I just think, and the bitterness, I never saw that in them. And so I just think the things that we went through helped them be a better, better preacher and a preacher's wife.
I don't see it in my kids. I don't see bitterness or resentment of any kind, really. And I don't think I ever saw it as they were growing up. But we're in a unique situation, I think, because we were in one place for almost the entire time that they were, well, Jordan was 4 and Jacob was 2 when we moved to Dripping Springs. So, and Mike has never known anywhere else. But I don't think that we've ever shielded them from anything that might have been unpleasant. But I know that we also did not necessarily always tell them everything. It wasn't necessary for them to know everything. In fact, I think it's not good for them to know. I'll go further than that. They really shouldn't know everything that we know. It's just, there's no reason for them to know things that are going on in the congregation, especially people that are struggling. I think we lose our credibility with the rest of the members of the church when we tell them things that they don't need to know. And when people find out through a channel that came from our children. But no, I never saw any bitterness. I think that maybe they felt like their relationships, if you will, were maybe scrutinized more than some of the kids at the congregation. But they've never been mistreated. My kids have not been mistreated. Maybe they have. Maybe we just didn't look at it that way. But they're kids, and they were silly and misbehaved sometimes, and they were disrespectful to us sometimes, but we handled that as a family and not as a preacher necessarily. And so as far as that goes, no, I don't see any of that. We were always careful to make sure that they didn't do anything because we were a preacher family. That's not ever your motivation to be seen as, you know, because whatever you do might hurt your dad, or whatever you do might embarrass your mom. That was not ever, you know. In fact, we went, I think, bounced the other way and said, don't ever let that be a factor. You do what you do because you're a Christian, not because you're a preacher's kid. And then I think that one other thing that was super important is that John was always very involved in their lives. He they always knew and still know that he's very interested in everything that they do. He served on the school board, which I don't think they really liked a whole lot, because he was gone every month for hours on a Thursday night, once a month. But as they grew older, they understood that he did that for them because he wanted to be as involved as he could with our school system. I don't think that they've ever felt like he spent an inordinate amount of time with the members as opposed to with them. He would always go and do go to their games. So I just think that, I don't know, I just don't think that they ever felt bitterness or resentment because we did not give them the opportunity to know things that might have made them feel that way. Plus, I think because their dad, they knew that their dad was interested in everything that they did, and that he wasn't going to pick someone else over them, if that makes sense.
I completely agree. I was going to, I'm pretty much going to echo what you have already said. We tried really hard for our kids to be aware of the fact that we considered that they were one of our primary ministries as a mom and dad, not related to the preacher job. that they were important and their souls are important to us, and we want them to go to heaven, and we want them to know Jesus and to grow spiritually. And we tried not to make them feel that they were in second place to us caring about anyone else's souls. They have souls too, and we really wanted to make that emphasis. And so it comes out in how do you spend your time. You got to share time with your family, and preachers do too. So we tried to make that balance. And Carla mentioned longevity. We made it a goal of ours in our ministry. We moved a lot at first, Mike and I, when it was just the two of us, about every 2 years, and he kind of got into the role of a troubleshooter, and troubled churches would call him and say, please come and work with us. We're going through this horrible crisis, and we would do it. So we had like three or four moves in a row that were troubleshooting things. And then we sat down together and said, you know what? We have our family now. Our kids were little, and we said our goal now is going to be to try to find a place where our kids can feel some sense of stability and maybe have some roots of their own. We never lived near family, and this was huge. We wanted them to learn that the church is their family. We didn't have grandparents in the same town. We wanted to show them from our own feelings that we love these people. These are our family. Your grandmother doesn't live here, but look at this lady right here on row number 3. Go hug her neck. She would have them over for cookies. You know, that we had relationships within the church as we would with an extended family. And I have asked my kids this question. I got assigned a topic similar to this at PTP, and they neither one could think of anything that they were bitter or resentful about, which I am very thankful is by the grace of God, which I say about everything else I do. But so those are just some things that I might add to what you've already said.
I don't know that any of my girls are bitter or resentful, but they have been teased from time to time. Well, you know, I can't believe you did that. You're a preacher's daughter, you know, or instead of being judged on as just another child, they are looked at a little bit differently. I remember one time our girls were in Bible class and they were having a question and answer, and one of the other students had missed the question, and it went on to this daughter, and she didn't know the answer. And one of the students said, I can't believe you didn't know that. Your daddy's the preacher. And she said, you missed it before I did, and your daddy's over my daddy. That child's dad was an elder, so she had a pretty good comeback. But they are looked at, I guess expected to know more about the Bible and stuff sometimes, and which can be a good thing, can be a blessing. But the older I, unlike these ladies, I'm not through raising my children. And so I have two, my oldest are both teenagers. And as they've gotten older, it's been harder for them when we travel. And we started homeschooling when our oldest was in first grade, so that we could travel with daddy. So he didn't have to cut back on his meetings. He could go and do as he needed to do, but we could still be together as a family. But that has gotten older as they're, has gotten harder as they're older, because they need stability. They rely on their friendships within their youth group. And so we've just had to try to balance that. If it's a Wednesday night summer series, sometimes we opt not to go. If we're not going to spend the night, sometimes the girls will stay with friends in town and stay here while we go out of town. Sometimes if it's just a short trip, Wayne will take the younger two and I'll stay in town with the older two. But we try to balance that so that there is no bitterness and resentment there.
We should have time for one more question. How important is it for you to have a close female confidant? And if you could just expound upon friendships in general for preachers' wives. You're Carla. I think Carla, yeah.
Well, when I first read this question, I thought, for what, my hair? Yeah, I do need a confidant to tell me your hair looks bad that way, or your legs are too white to wear that dress, or something like that. But for other deeper things, it's a tricky situation. Not tricky, it's complicated, I think, because, John is my confidant, and he knows more than I know about what things that are going on, but he knows everything I know, basically. maybe not something that's silly or, you know, that he doesn't really need to know. But I think we just have to be really careful. And I really do feel like it's fine for us to have close friends, as long as we're not excluding those that are making other people feel like they can't approach our little group. You know, that is not just a preacher's wife thing. That is a Christian thing. But we seem to be maybe a little bit, because everyone knows who you are in the congregation. Most likely everyone knows you're Catherine and you're Andy's wife. But especially when you go to a new place, maybe you don't know everybody else. You don't know all of their situation. So you're in a more of a public light. And so your choice in friends is revealed more openly, probably, than others. But I just think we have to be careful not to exclude anyone. And sometimes when we have those really, really close friends, it's hard not to. And as far as being a confidant, if I do, it needs to be someone who is grounded in the faith. And it needs to be someone who will tell me when I'm wrong about something, not be afraid to tell me when I'm wrong. Someone who won't be influenced by my opinions necessarily. But, you know, if you do confide in someone that is a member of your congregation, or even someone that's a member of another congregation that knows situations back home, it undermines your credibility when things get back, and they will. They'll get back to your home congregation, and there you are with, you know, a red face because you have said something to someone else that you shouldn't have said, that you should have kept to yourself, that's a private thing that someone maybe confided in you about and asked your advice about. And you may have had the most innocent of motives in going and talking to someone else and getting their advice about something. But I just think, personally, don't do it. Just don't do it. Talk to your husband, a trusted elder's wife maybe, but be super careful about that. I'm not a big fan of the... honestly, and y'all may feel different, and that's fine, but not a big fan of the Preacher's Wives group on Facebook and other places, because it just seems like, not every one of them, but it seems like a lot of times you get on there and you'll see that someone is saying, ladies, I just need to vent, and then it'll be a long diatribe about some member of their congregation that hurt their feelings, or they couldn't believe that they did this, or maybe it's something about one of the elders or one of the elders' wives, and it's just not wise. I think that we need to turn the situation around and think about it from a different viewpoint. Think about, is this something that I need to look at differently? Is this something that I need to change my thoughts about? Is this really not a big deal? Am I making a mountain out of a molehill? There's so many things that we need to go through before we actually go and talk to someone else. And so I would say 9 times out of 10, no, don't have a confidant other than your husband or a trusted elder's wife. And even that trusted elder's wife needs to be, we need to be careful. So
I tend to agree with Carla. Although I think it's great for you to have friends and for us to have friends, and we have friends. But the thing about the confidant part of the question, I think, is where we're going with this. Can we share secrets with someone else and trust that those secrets will not be spread? I have a friend that is a partial confidant, maybe. I've known her for years and years. She is not a member of our congregation, so that makes it a little easier. She doesn't know the people we're talking. If I had a problem, I could say, I'm really having a problem, and here's kind of what it's about. And she's very grounded in the faith. That was a great point. I don't run to her with everything, though. We were in a work one time that was, I was just being just bombarded with problems of women because of the situation that the church was in. It was a troublemaking move again. And they were coming to me and telling me things. And I felt like I was drowning in problems that these women were heaping on me. And this is not normal, I wouldn't say, with every work, for sure. And I got to where after this woman would leave or I would get off the phone, I would run out into the backyard and look up at the sky and say, God, that was meant for you. You know, because sometimes people will pour things onto you and they want you to almost fix their problem. And sometimes they just need an ear. They just need to unload something. And I got to where I was, it helped me to become more mindful of the fact that a lot of the things that I felt were overwhelming me were really things that God needed to deal with. And so that was a way that I grew then. And I'm going to say this, and you may know my mom, but my mom has been a great strength in my life. And she's not a person who shares things. And my daughter is a great strength in my life. Now, I'm selective about what I would say to either one of those two people. I don't just gush out everything to either one of them. But I have certain people that I can go to with certain types of problems. And Mike overall. Mike, second to the Lord, my husband, is the one that I would go to with any kind of a problem. Can I put a P.S. on that real fast?
Yes, go ahead.
P.S. I think other preachers' wives make great friends.
That was going to be part of my answer. Whether you need one or not, I don't know that I'm here or there on that, I would say if you do choose to confide in someone, make sure that they're trustworthy, that you know that whatever you tell them is going to remain in 100% confidence. Never say negative things about your husband to others. I don't care who it is. Don't say negative things about your husband. Also, it might be good to have someone that's not connected in any way to your congregation. You would never want to shed a negative light on your congregation or your elders. So maybe someone who doesn't know anything, who lives far away, and you can just confide in. But another preacher's wife is good for that. And things like Focal Point are places that you can make great friends that you can confide in from time to time. And I guess just the last thing is just, if you do confide in someone, make sure it's someone who can give you wise spiritual counsel, because you wouldn't want it to look like you're gossiping or anything like that. I mean, when we talk to others, it should be to learn how to fix things.
Well, I'm with the other ladies. David is my confidant. He's who I go to for everything. And sometimes I feel like I'm putting too much on him. But I'm not. But as far as having female confidence in the congregation, I would definitely say absolutely not. I may have a trust issue. It may be me. But preachers' wives are the best ones to talk to, because they've been through some of the same things that we're going through. And they can help you out where members may not can help you out with that, and some may even be looking for something to say. I have one particular young lady that comes to me for everything, not about her problems, but about somebody else's problems. And I'm pretty sure she's waiting on me to say, well, I know that. I know what they're doing. I always just tell her, you need to take that to the elders. That's not my responsibility. So it's just impossible, I think, to trust members where you are to keep it between you and them. I also have my son that I can confide in and know I get great advice, and my daughter in love. So I can go to them too, and then my daughter and my son in love. And I just appreciate having a family that I can confide in and be a part of.
Thank you very much, ladies. We are out of time. That wasn't so bad, was it? I thought those were a great range of questions, so I hope you guys are filled up with some good ideas and knowledge and wisdom, and we are dismissed until 3:30.